Bible verse reading this morning will be from Exodus 20, verse 7. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain.
Didn't want to overwork Jim this morning with the length of that Bible reading. That verse pretty well says it, doesn't it? So we've come to this third of the Ten Commandments in the series I'm doing when it's my turn to speak at this early morning hour. As I began, my own mind went to, when did I hear this verse quoted and what was it quoted about? As I was growing up, coming to church from about the age of 7 on, when my parents became Christians, and it was apparent in my mind that the most of the time that I heard this verse quoted, it was often used as the basis for a lesson or a conversation or to make a point about a type of speech that should not be practiced by the Christian. And specifically that it was talking about cursing, using of language that misused the name of God in our everyday language. And I don't have a real objection to that. I think I'll show where that's included in that in just a minute or two. But what I will say is, if that's what we think God was talking about when he gave this to Moses, we probably have not properly understood how the Ten Commandments are worded and the progression of thought that is contained in the Ten Commandments. And so what I want to do this morning is to really look at the command, particularly the contextual background of this command, to make sure that we understand what it really meant or should have meant to the children of Israel, and then what applications, I think there are at least two, that we can make Christians today. I recognize it's the old law, it's the Ten Commandments. And people will say, well, we're not under the Ten Commandments, we're under the gospel, and yet the truth of the matter is that, with the exception of one, which I will talk about the next time I'm up here, the other 9 Ten Commandments are repeated in the gospels and in the New Testament. So they are applicable to Christians as well. And so what I want to do, with apologies to my wife who doesn't like me to get really involved with words, I'm going to start out with some key words in this verse. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not leave him unpunished who takes his name in vain. And the first phrase or first word of that is, do not take the name of the Lord in vain. Do not take it. Well, what does that mean? It's from a Hebrew word, and the Hebrew word has no real connection in English, so I'm not going to worry about it unless you want to look it up. But according to the Theological Word Book of the Old Testament, this Hebrew word is used a lot in the Old Testament, and it's used with 3 basic meanings. The first one is to lift up, and that's, I put that on the board because that is what we want to talk about for just a second. The Theological Word Book of the Old Testament says that this phrase lifting up can be either a literal lifting up, as for instance it's used in the book of Leviticus to describe the priests lifting up things involved with the sacrifice so that the whole congregation could see them. But it also is used figuratively of lifting something up, for instance, in just our speech. not an object, but an idea, and that's its relationship to the name. Now, the other two ways this word's used in the Old Testament, we can see the connection. One is to bear, to carry, to support. For instance, the instruction to the Levites to carry the ark on the rods that were designed for the carrying of it, or just simply to take something away, to remove it from the presence of a group of people or from a place. So the idea here is of taking, is of lifting up the name of the Lord, is a reference to the way in which they would call upon the name of the Lord in worship, in their adoration or praise. That is, how did they raise their voice? And it says they are not to do that with the name of the Lord in a vain or empty manner. The second word in the command is the word name, and it is simply the common word that means the same thing in Hebrew that it means in English. For instance, if you look up Webster, or other dictionaries, the word name in the English language, it's going to say it's the word or words by which a person, place, or thing is known. And so we are all familiar with name and the use of names in our language. And of course, the significance of this in terms of the Ten Commandments is that God told them what his name was. And when he told them what his name was, then he said, "You don't lift my name up in vain." And then that's where we come to the word the Lord, which is not really a translation of the Hebrew language that is there. This is the actual name of God. And just like in English, names have longer and shorter versions. For instance, if you looked at my birth certificate, you would not find Mike there. You would find Michael. And yet, I'm fully aware, this may hit home with some of you too, if my mother ever called me Michael, I was in trouble. You know? Because they used the other name exclusively. Well, that's true with the name of the Lord. These four letters in Hebrew are called the sacred tetragrammaton, the four sacred letters. And this is the YHWH in our English alphabet. And this is the name. And it has, in our English Bibles, only the American Standard Version, which hardly anybody uses anymore, translates this word, and it translates it Jehovah, which is what is used in a lot of our songs, so forth. Most Hebrew scholars think that the pronunciation may have been something more like Yahweh, but nobody knows for sure, because Hebrew is written without vowels. And so, as they naturally spoke it, they would use the vowels. Yahweh is the long form, and it is the name of Jehovah, as we would say it, the name of God. It occurs 5,321 times in the Old Testament. Yet in your English Bibles, the one I use, the New American Standard, the one that's in the Pew English Standard, you don't ever find that. All you find is the Lord in all capital letters. Now, the shorter form of that word, of that name, is Yah, just the YH. And that's what God said to Moses when Moses said, "Who shall I tell them sent me?" He said, "You tell them Yah sent me." And that's not used near as many times, only about 50 times standing alone in the Old Testament, and almost many other times in forms with other words. For instance, Yahshua, which we say Joshua, and Jesus, Jesus, are both forms using Yah at the start of the name. And if you go through the Old Testament and look at all the names that use part of that in their names, it's used many, many times. That's probably more information than you want. But the traditional Hebrew approach to this and why it's the Lord in our English Bibles is that they looked at this command that you should not lift up the name of the Lord your God in vain. And the rabbinical tradition developed that that meant if you tried to pronounce the name of the Lord and you mispronounced it, you would be condemned. That's what that punishment is. Don't you misuse my name. And so in practice, the Hebrew scribes did write the word out in copying their scriptures. But in reading the scriptures or in speaking, they would not speak the name. And if they read the scriptures and came to a passage like this, they would simply use the term the Lord, which is not necessarily implying deity at all. But they did that so not to offend God and not to take his name in vain. I'm going to come back and say more about that in a few minutes. But that's the idea. But he says, you do not lift up the name of Yahweh, your God. And that is from the other word, Elohim, in the Bible. And it simply identifies the deity, that being which is divine. And basically, this command says, Yah is your God, Israel. Remember, these Ten Commandments form the basis of their religious law, but also of their societal law. And he says, we have a relationship, people to God, and Yah is your God. And do not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. And that word simply means that which is worthless, that which is futile, that which is inconsequential, that which is not restrained. Don't use it in an uncontrolled manner. That which is false. So that's the nature of this command. So a proper understanding of this command involves much more than a prohibition of profane language. It's included, but it involves much more than that. So this is the main point that I wanted to get to after going through all those words, is that a proper understanding of the third commandment is to recognize that it is the logical application of the first two commandments. This is the proper perspective. As God lays forth the groundwork of the going forth as the God of the Hebrew nation and how he wants the Hebrew nation to respond to him, the first thing he tells them is, you can't have anybody before me. Yahweh is of first importance in your lives. And secondly, that they would not build for themselves any idols or representations of him. So, I'm your God. I've revealed to you my character, my nature. Don't you think of me in any way other than the way in which I've revealed it to you. And so that would, of course, come to the point where they would say, we do not take or use the name of the Lord your God in vain. And so it would become, not only don't use it in a blasphemous way, but use it in a way in which is acceptable to him. And so the third commandment expands that idea that they should not only have no other gods before him, not misrepresent them, but that they should not offer any false or empty worship to him. The essential nature of the third commandment demands purity and service in worship. It is involved and based upon the exclusivity, I managed to say the word right this morning, exclusivity of the relationship between Israel and Yahweh. In Deuteronomy 6 and verse 13, it says, "You shall fear only the Lord your God, and you shall worship him and swear by his name." Their life, their worship, their word is all involved with lifting up God in the appropriate way. Again, in Leviticus chapter 20, verses 1 through 3, "Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'You shall also say to the sons of Israel, any man from the sons of Israel or from the alien sojourning in Israel who gives any of his offspring to Molech,'" which was a god of the nations that surrounded them, which practiced human sacrifice. He says, "You shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I also will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people, because he has given some of his offspring to Molech so as to defile my sanctuary and to profane my holy name." And so the essence of profaning the name of Yahweh is to practice false religion, to violate commandments 1 and 2, and to use his name in the violation of those commandments. Now, it does extend to the misuse of his name. In Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 12, "You shall not swear falsely by my name so as to profane the name of the Lord your God. I am the Lord." And so they were not to use it in an oath to convince people to believe them because they're swearing by the name of the Lord, but they're actually deceiving them. He says, so don't misuse my name that way. And, of course, it would involve what we often connect with this command, which is profane or blasphemous use of the name of the Lord. Leviticus, chapter 24, verses 15 and 16. There it says, "You shall speak to the sons of Israel, saying, 'If anyone curses his God, then he will bear his sin. Moreover, the one who blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall certainly stone him. The alien as well as the native, when he blasphemes the name, shall be put to death.'" And the context of that verse, which I didn't read all the verses that precede this, involve a case where a man uses the name of God to curse somebody that he's in a fight with. And they take him outside of the camp and stone him because he used the name of God in an imprecation against this person. So these are the essential nature and applications of the third commandment in its context. But it involves much more than simply using the Lord's name in profane language, but that is also a part of that. Okay. But I want to look for just a minute before we close at a very practical application about this command. We talked earlier about how the Jews viewed this and the four letters that were the proper name of their God, and how they developed a lot of rituals around it. Not just not saying it. I've read in books about the work of the Jewish scribes that, and think about this when you go back and say this name is used 5,321 times in the Old Testament, that a scribe was required to totally bathe himself before writing these four letters. So if you were a scribe, like in the Essene community at Qumran or someplace like that, and you were copying a part of the Old Testament onto a new scroll, every time before they would write that name, they had to bathe themselves. So when they found the Essene community, they found these big pools, and at first they thought they were baptistries and that they practiced baptism. But later they found out that no, they were used by the scribes because they couldn't write the name of God without personally cleansing themselves before they did it. And they were showing respect. That was a custom. But there was this other custom that says we can't dare speak this because if we mispronounce it, we will be condemned. Think about the irony of that for just a second. With what we said about the first, second, and third commandment, the Jews developed these traditions out of a fear that mispronouncing the name of their God would lead to them being condemned. I'm standing in a room with a bunch of good Bible students who've studied the Bible most of your lives. Would you say that the problem that led to the demise of Israel and going into captivity was that they didn't elocute their words very well? Now, they didn't go into captivity because they couldn't pronounce the name of the Lord right. They went into captivity because they ignored the first two commandments. And they gave themselves up over to idolatry. So what I'm saying here is their emphasis upon we can't say these four letters for fear of mispronouncing them is a colossal missing of the point. They just plain missed the point of the commandment and put all the emphasis upon what they said or didn't say, how they pronounced it. And by the way, remember, they had accents like we do. So they wouldn't have all pronounced it exactly the same anyway. But they just missed the point. And by the way, that's not the only way in which they missed the point. There are several in the Gospels, but I just chose this one because I knew I would run out of time. Matthew 23:23-24. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! You tithe mint and dill and cumin. And so you get that picture of them taking their kitchen spices and carefully counting them out to make sure that they precisely give a tenth of their spices to the Lord. But what did Jesus say about them? While you do that, you have neglected the weightier provisions of the law. Justice and mercy and faithfulness, but these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others, you blind guides who strain at a gnat and swallow a camel. Jesus is condemning the Pharisees for missing the point of what God has revealed to them. Their emphasis was on the measurable outer performance aspects of the law. And note, Jesus says that's important. We want to be as precise as we humanly can be to do exactly what God has told us to do. That should be our goal and our objective. But however, without the underlying principles, and go back to the very first lesson in this series, that everything that's said in this law is based upon two commandments. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. That without those two, the outward measurable things lose their value. You can be right in all the details, and wrong, very wrong, in the heart. So this third commandment condemns the use of God's name in any way that is devoid of respect, honor, or reverence. that should attend the calling or the lifting up of the name of God in our lives. Mankind, even those who consider themselves God's people, need to give great care not to miss the point when they study the Scriptures. We need to apply and practice the Word of God in our lives and our worship in a way that always honors Him. Brother Gary has the prayer, then we'll be dismissed for our class.